Well, 1 Samuel 21, here you've got a lot of ups and downs in David's faith, I think. And I remember when I was a young guy, I used to go to Bible study with Howie Whittaker, and Howie used to get us to draw faith graphs for Bible characters. And I know it's a slightly questionable exercise, really, but it was sort of interesting that you had time along the bottom, and then up the side on the vertical, you had a mark out of 10 for spirituality. You went through the lives of various people, and David was one of them that Howie went through with us. And you look at various incidents in their lives, and you mark them out of 10. Like, you think, oh, wow, like he kills Goliath. That's, you know, pretty high. And then other things like this incident here in 1 Samuel 21 would sort of, well, you debated it amongst yourselves and thought, well, yeah, you could argue there was faith, but there was some sort of unbelief as well. And so you marked him somewhat down for that. And then the idea was, as Harry was a maths teacher, he would say, we'll draw a best fit line through the jagged graph. And the graph is pretty jagged, you know, Bathsheba sort of goes down to zero. You draw the best fit line through the jagged graph, and of course the idea is that it's inclining upwards, that overall, in a person's life, their faith overall, despite all the dramatic ups and downs, is trending upwards in spiritual terms. Now, as I say, that is a slightly questionable exercise on a number of fronts, but I think overall, the overall conclusion that you're supposed to see is, I think, sound enough. And it's true enough to observed experience in our own lives. So look here at 1 Samuel 21, verse 8. David said to Abimelech, don't you have here a spear or sword? I've neither brought my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste. Well, immediately you think of the David who went out to fight Goliath with nothing and was offered a sword and helmet and all that sort of thing, and armor, and he declined it. And he goes out in faith with five smooth stones and a sling, and he wins. But now he's known for having a sword and weapons. And he says, well, I didn't bring them. I'm on the king's business. Well, Saul at this point had been rejected. And again, you wonder whether he should have said that. And then, verse 9, the priest said, the sword of Goliath, the Philistine whom you killed, is here, wrapped in a cloth. If you will take that, take it. David said, there's none like that. Give it to me. So David's eager taking of the sword of Goliath, there's none like that. Give it to me. I'm afraid it does contrast pretty sadly with his earlier rejection of such weapons in order to kill Goliath. And it contrasts with the way that he took Goliath's sword and with that cut off Goliath's head. So you could say that this is David very much down on his spiritual graph. This is maybe not as low as the sin with Bathsheba and Uriah, but it's still scoring pretty low. And David then arose and fled that day for fear of Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. Well, we just scored him on that. Whenever God's people go down south to the Philistines or to Egypt, it's nearly always associated with a lack of faith. And we, of course, wonder whether he actually took Goliath's sword back to Gath. That's, of course, where Goliath came from. And it's a bit odd that, as far as the record leaves us, to imagine he had Goliath's sword with him, as if he was trying to make friends now with the Philistines and possibly apologizing for what he had done. Here's Goliath's sword. You can have it back. So, quite a number of the Psalms at this time appear to have been written around this time. Psalm 56 is titled, When Seized by the Philistines in Gath. And yet that Psalm 56 is very similar to 57, which was, the title is, a poem by David when he fled from Saul and was hidden in the cave. And I think the parallel is that when he was there in Gath, he was in a terrible situation, really betrayed his people in one sense. He'd lost his faith, he'd just gone in there. And he found himself, once he was inside that walled city, in a similar position to how he'd been when he was in the cave with Saul outside it. absolutely trapped. And I think that's why Psalm 56 and 57 appeared, as quite a few of the Psalms are. So he reapplied, I think, his psalm when he was in the cave to his situation in Gath, and then he writes it up afterwards under inspiration. So you could say that it led him to repentance and to a sort of revived faith when he realized the foolish thing that he'd done. He was now in the Philistines' own city, the home city of Goliath, whom he had killed. And, of course, the people were saying, verse 11, isn't this David, the king of the land? Didn't they sing one to another? Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s? These were the relatives of the guys that David had killed. So he was really in a bad situation, and it was just as bad as being in the cave with Saul outside it. And so he really can only turn to God. And we're told that he was very much afraid of Achish, king of Gath, verse 12. Again, a sad contrast with when he was fighting Goliath. And the Israelites were all frightened of this great man from Gath. And he says, let no man's heart be troubled because of him. I will soon overcome him. And now he really is different. And he acts the madman. He pretends that he's having a nervous breakdown, pretended to be mad, verse 13, scrabbled on the doors of the gate, let his saliva fall down onto his beard. And you do wonder how much of that was actually acting, or whether he really did have some breakdown. I mean, the pressure on him would have been huge. And Achish, I think, realizes that, verse 14. He says, why then have you brought this man to me to play the madman? It says in verse 15. So God saved David from this situation just as he saved him out of the cave. And that's the reason for the connection between Psalms 56 and 57. And yet, David was right down on his faith. And this is how God often works. When you're down on your faith, God comes in and is gracious to you. Think of Isaac when he goes down into Egypt and he lies about his wife. And you really think, well, that's pretty awful. And the local people obviously were pretty disgusted with what a sort of lowlife Isaac was and the way that he was behaving. And they sort of chuck him out. And then you read, and God blessed him with huge wealth. And you think, no, surely he should have sort of had rapt knuckles by God for doing what he did. But this is grace. And of course, this is to guide us. When you see people misbehaving or in weakness, what do? Get mad with them? Withdraw love from them? No, there you have a test of your love. You have a test of whether you really have the love of God or whether you really know the grace of Jesus, because his grace and his love is very often directed specifically to people when they are on the downturn of their faith, when they are weak, when their faith and trust and love of God is not as it should be. He pours out his grace. It's not as if, oh, you do something good and, oh, yeah, you get a blessing. Or you do something not so good or you're not faithful, oh, yeah, you get a curse. That this is a totally wrong view. And it's wrong on a number of counts, but it's wrong also in that it robs the grace of God of all its wonder. Because it is so often when you're on that downturn that you get that little touch from God. And this is what happened with David. When he was there, he got himself in this position. He'd been going down the graph, as it were, going down weaker and weaker, and he was now there in Goliath's hometown of Gath, and there he was. He was almost certain, really, to be killed. And God gets him out of it. He throws himself on God because he's really got nobody else to throw himself upon, just as he was, like he was when he was in the cave with Saul outside it and no way out of the cave. And so it is really in our lives too. And as I say, it must be reflected in the grace and love we show others, not simply, as Jesus says, loving those who love you, because then what thank do you have? Not at all. But more proactively, seeking to never withdraw love, but to continue to show love and grace exactly to people in their weak and low points.